حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. In our Islamic development, when we want to grow and reach greater heights in our spirituality, in our relationship with Allah, the one thing that we should not do is depend on one aspect. Meaning that, just take for example, I only emphasize, let's say, aqaid and beliefs. If I just depend on beliefs, then the outcome would be imbalanced. If I just depend on akhlaq, then you see that the growth will be imbalanced. The structure of my spirituality will be imbalanced. If I just emphasize fiqh and jurisprudence and ahkam, and if that's my only emphasis in my growth, you see that the structure of my spirituality would be imbalanced. Better way of doing this is to keep a balance between all aspects and to depend on all the pillars in order that our growth can be correct and balanced. Like for example, a lot of times parents, when they want to raise their children, you see they emphasize only one thing or another, any one thing, they emphasize that, and usually the outcome of it will be imbalanced. For example, they will emphasize reward and punishment in the growth of their children. So anything, for example, a child does, you see that they will say that, okay, if you do this, you'll get a reward. You know, if you keep all the fast, then I'll give you an iPod. Right? Or, for example, if they do something wrong, then I'm going to take away some, something that they like. So this is, you know, when you emphasize that, then usually this wears out and it is not effective after a while. And at the end, that child grows up wanting something for doing something. You know, you want something because you grew up like that. I fast because I always got gifts for it. So this should not be the reason for him fasting. It could be used as an incentive to bring him to fast. It should be used as an incentive to make him do good things, but not the reason. But if we just emphasize that and only that, then what happens is that person, that kid growing up, the reason for him praying or fasting or doing any good thing is to get something for it. It's like an engineer trying to build a building. An engineer, when he wants to build a building, a structural engineer, he will see that all the sides and all the bases, the weight of the building is given in proportion to all the sides in order that it becomes strong. You don't just put the weight of the building on one side and let one of the pillar carry all the weight. The engineer, what he does is that he breaks the weight apart and says that this should be equally distributed around. The same thing is when you want to, when you want to look at your own spirituality and your own growth and your own closeness to Allah, when you want to grow it and build it, then you have to be an engineer, a spiritual engineer, in trying to balance your views on different things in order that the weight of your spirituality is equally distributed in the different parts of religion. Not just akhlaq, not just aqaid, not just fiqh, but in all aspects. This is a better way of growth and a stronger person and spirituality. If that is clear, give me a loud salawat. And this is how Allah wants us to raise ourselves, to be balanced, to distribute the weight of our growth on different aspects of religion. Don't just take one and run with it. Some people, for example, they take akhlaq and they run with it, end up becoming Sufis. Some people, for example, they take fiqh and run with it, end up becoming like Wahhabis, right? Some people, they just take, for example, aqaid, and they run with it, and they become tea drinkers. Usually those people who drink tea and have chai or tea, Some people take politics and run with it, and they end up becoming politicians. Right? So all in all, you see that if, and all of these are a part of religion, right? Nothing is, all these things are a parcel of religion. But it has to be that when we learn these things, not one thing should be emphasized. All of these things should be in their proper place. Then that structure of deen in ourselves becomes perfected. That's what we want to achieve. Yes, there are certain issues in Islam, and Allah obviously did not intend for us to learn everything and know everything, right? So there are certain key elements Allah has put in the religion, and those key issues are so effective that they handle many more things in our life. They solve many more things in our life. Certain things Allah has put in the religion. For anything, you see. For example, when it comes to akhlaq, right? Our growth, akhlaqi growth, our etiquette and ethics. So, for example, we are told to do like many things, we are told not to do many things. For example, you should not lie, you should not deceive, you should not cheat others, you should not do israf and extravagance. All of these things, right? These are, for example, there. You should not do ghibat. All of these things are haram. And all of them have very bad effects on us, right? All of them do. Now, the issue is, when we try to solve these problems in us, let's say I have a habit of making ghibat. This is the pastime of the mu'mineen, is ghibat, talking about other people. So now, when we make that habit of ours, let's say I have that habit, and I, for example, make ghibat. Now I want to solve that problem. So now, how do I solve it, my friends? This is where it's important. How do I solve that problem? Let's say, for example, I cheat others, I lie. And I have a habit of lying, right? Every time you ask me about something about myself, I say something that's not right. Oh, I used to do that also. Oh yeah, I did that also, And so what happens is that I'm lying. And I have a habit of lying. So now how do I solve that problem of lying? Right? I mean, these are issues that we face and we want to solve them. Now, one way of tackling it is to make a list of things, a list of all the wrongs we have, and try to solve them one by one. This is one way of doing things, right? You know, for example, you come to New Year's, you make a resolution. You have a list of resolution, New Year's or 15 Shaban or Eid, whenever you make a resolution in your life. At least have one day to make a resolution, right? Make a resolution, you know what? I want to do this, I want to do that, and you have a list of things. I want to lose weight, I want to go to the health club, I want to join this, I want to do this, and all these things. So you have all these things that you wrote down as a list. Now, if you try to tackle them one by one, what you will see in your life is frustration. Because, you know, you're trying to think, okay, you know what, I don't want to agree with here, I don't want to agree with that, I don't want to talk about this. And then it comes out, and said, oh, what did I do that for? Right? And you get frustrated. It's not helping. Right? When you try not to lie, you see you're just bothering yourself. And you see, you try so much. This is not what Allah intended. When we are living our life, Allah did not want to make our life a headache for us, that every time we are thinking about these little things, then this is giving us headaches. And really making our life miserable. Is that what Allah wanted? See, a lot of people who don't know better, when they speak about akhlaq, they say, oh, you should try to do this, and you should try not to do ghibat, you should try not to lie, and not to do these things. When they say these things, they're not understanding that, listen, yes, these things should not be done, but how do you prevent yourself from doing them? I mean, Allah did not want to make our life miserable. That's a miserable life to live. Oh, you know what? I shouldn't be doing ghibat. Oh, I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be doing that. It's a miserable life to live. It's a headache. So how did Allah solve it? So what Allah did is that for every aspect of our life, Allah gave a key solution. A key. A fundamental solution that if you work on this, then all these other problems will be solved. So when it comes to akhlaq, when we have all these problems, how do you get rid of all these haram things and all these problems? How do you get rid of these things? So Allah says, listen, I'll just give you one simple solution. Just work there and you will be fine. What is that? Do you all want to know? Brother Hani paid the price for it. Right? So that was the price that I was going to ask. How much are you willing to pay to learn this? Right? One thing Allah says. Just do one thing and all these other things will be solved. Your ghibat problem, your lying problem, your cheating problem, all of these other wrongs will be solved just by doing one thing, by focusing on one thing. Allah says it clearly in the Quran. He says, As-salatu tanha anil fahsha'i wal munkar. He says, salat, namaz, prayer. He says, this is what forbids you from all types of wrongs. He says, just concentrate on your prayer. That's the key issue. You perfect that and everything else will be solved. If you don't perfect that, you try to solve everything else, everything remains in place. And your life becomes miserable. But one thing Allah gave, perfect your prayer. And then you see everything else will be solved. And what Allah is saying is the truth. Yeah, Allah is saying the truth, right? A group of scholars, you know, they're students, scholars, you know, they're teachers of the Hazza also, Hujjat al-Islams, went to Ayatollah Behjet. Ayatollah Behjet was one of the foremost teachers of akhlaq and irfan in the Hausa. They went to him and they asked him that, Agha, what is the best way to reach Allah? What is the best way to reach Allah? So, you know, the answer he gave, he says, An-namaz awwali waqt. Pray at the first time. You know, we know about prayers at first time. We're also ulama, you know. We know about that. You know, they thought that he was going to give something secret that no one else knows, that only he knows, that he's going to give something to them, right? But no, prayed the first time. That's it. So, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, we thought he would do more than that for us. This is simple advice you give for awam, for the people, not for ulama. So they came back again after a year. Right? They said, yeah, we went back to him after a year and says, you know, what should we do to get closer to Allah? You know, he said, you know, pray at the first time. At the first time you come, you pray there. But yeah, that's what you said last year. He said, then it means that it still hasn't been perfected for you. He's saying that, listen, Allah is not lying in the Quran. He's saying, As-salat tanha anil fahshai wal munkar. Prayer is that which forbids evil from you. If there is evil, if there's something stopping you from going to Allah, it means you haven't perfected your prayer yet. That's where the jihad is. You see, one issue. I'm saying it as an example I'm giving you. One thing that Allah mentioned. One thing. Work on that, you see, everything else will be solved. A person who perfects one thing, solves everything. This is in terms of akhlaq. I give an example of akhlaq. Well, let me give you another example of tarbiyat. Right? How do you raise your children? Everyone wants to raise good children, right? I mean, no one has children with the intention that I want him to be a criminal when he grows up. Right? No one has that intention, right? I hope not. Right? You have an intention. Oh, what? You have an intention?
I was just going to say, just to make that thing, because said that the wuzur al, so it has to be mentioned that just praying on time,
wuzur al. Start praying. You cannot get wuzur al. You can't work on it. Always remember, wuzur al. You cannot achieve it. It's a gift from Allah. Hudur ekalb, meaning that having attention in prayer, focus in prayers, remember this, is not something you can achieve with your actions. You cannot attain it. It is a gift from Allah after you perfected your prayer. When you pray on time the way He wants you to for a long time, then Allah starts giving you gifts. One of those gifts is focus and hudurul kalb. That's what He gives as a gift. You cannot achieve it. I cannot try in my life to achieve that. And it's useless to make that effort. It's Allah who gives that to you, right? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Another example I'll give about tarbiyat, about raising children, right? We want to raise children. How do you want to raise children? You want to raise them good? Okay. So now, when you read our books, and we have big, fat, thick books about raising children and having a good family, right? Family books, raising children, they go through so many rules that you're looking at them and saying, man, if I apply all these things in life, right, I won't have time to do anything else, right? You do this to your children, you do that, you do this, keep them away from this, and all of these little things, if you start doing that, you see, again, it will lead you to frustration more than anything else. So Allah, He doesn't want us to go through this. The way Allah made us to live here, He wants us to make our life easy. Let us have fun. He says, listen, I brought you here so that you can have fun and excitement, not to make your life miserable. So now what happens is that what Allah did is that say, okay, I'll give you a key solution. How do you make your children good? How do you raise them good? What's the best way of doing it? So there's one simple solution Allah, you know, in Islam we have. And let me just give that to you so that it helps you. And I'm just giving these things to you so you understand how to deal with issues in our life. Little issue, right? So what is that issue that helps us raise our children? Brothers and sisters, very simple. Just pay attention to what I'm saying. And for those who are young adults and have young children, it will help you a lot. And if your children are already grown up, inshallah, tough luck. Right? Next time, yes, that's right. So how do you raise children good? One simple solution Islam gave us. You know what that is? Very simple. Just create an environment in your house where the mother teaches the children that your father is the king of the house, obey his commands. And the father teaches the children that your mother is the queen of the house, so always love her. That's it. The mother should be the one who's telling the children, listen to your father. He's in charge. And the father should be saying, listen, your mother is the nucleus of the house. Hold on to her. Never make her upset. Just this environment. That's it. If you do that much, you will see all the problems in the house of raising a child, most of them are going to be solved. A child who's raised in that environment where the love of the house, the nucleus of the house is the mother, and the father is the one who gives the commands and orders in the house. You see, that child is different. He's raised differently. Very simple. Just apply that. You know, a man came to me, and I read the nikah of his son a year before I read his nikah. He comes after a year and he says, Maulana, my son wants a divorce. I said, what? I thought he was on his honeymoon. Why does he want a divorce for? I thought he was on his honeymoon. What's wrong? So he said, Maulana, you speak to him. So I said, alright. Yeah, I spoke to the guy. I said, you know, what's wrong with you, man? You know, you just got married. You like your wife. What happened in 1 year? He said, I can't take her anymore. You know, it's too much. She's too much. I can't take her anymore. That's it. I don't have patience for her. You know what? I understood the problem. So, I spoke to the dad. So the dad said, well, did you get anywhere? This and that. I said, well, I know the problem. He said, what's the problem? He said, just answer one question. I asked the dad, answer one question. While your children were growing up, did you used to put down and ridicule their mother in front of them? Did you used to ridicule her? Oh, she doesn't know anything. Or she's stupid. You know? All you women are stupid like that. Did you ever used to disrespect her in front of the children? Well, what does it have to do with anything? That has everything to do with this. It's there he learned not to respect women. Not to have respect for women. That's where he learned this. You know, if you had respected her in front of them, you see, they would never grow up to disrespect any woman. It's we who teach them. A mother, she comes to me and says, you know, my daughter, you know, she refuses to wear hijab. I said, so what's the problem? Everyone else, who's wearing hijab nowadays? No, but I teach Islam in the madrasa. Oh, so that's the problem. I teach Islam in the madrasa. It'll be a shame if he doesn't wear hijab. What will people say? Okay, that's the problem. So I said, listen, you know, I already know what the problem is. He said, really, Maulana, what should I advise her? I said, listen, you know more about Islam than your husband, right? I knew the lady and I knew her husband. I said, you know more about Islam than your husband, right? He says, yes. Now, because you know more than him, did you used to speak loud to him and put him down in front of the children and say, you don't know anything? I know, I have read this. Yeah, but Maulana, what does it have to do with this? He says, that's where your children haven't learned how to obey the orders of someone who's an authority over them. That's why they have no respect for Allah. If they don't have respect for authority at home, how would they have respect for authority outside their home, in their real life? These are things that raises children up. This is what needs to be done, my friends. And Allah gave that one solution for many problems. Many of the problems are solved. And you see, these are the solutions that we need to look at and apply in our home. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So there are certain things that where Allah, He gave us as key solutions. Yes, those things are there, like Salat, right? Like what I just mentioned to you. Like for example, the love of Ahlul Bayt. Love of Ahlul Bayt, Mawaddat of Ahlul Bayt, the love of Ahlul Bayt is what attaches us, is what cleanses our hearts, prepares us in order to communicate with Allah. They are the tangible goal for the intangible objective. Right? Allah is an intangible objective. I said, if you remember some days ago I mentioned about love. Let me just expand it a little bit right now. You see, love, what is love? Love is from ma'rifat. My friends, love is from ma'rifat. Ma'rifat, knowing. Why do you love your brothers and sisters, your mother and father? Do you really think it's because you have this blood relationship with them? Do you really think so? I mean, why is it that, for example, I love my father, I love my mother, I love my son so much? Why is that? Do you really think that it's because of this blood relationship that we have? What if the same relative, whether it's your son or your father or anyone else, your brother, he got lost as an infant, as a child, as a toddler, he was lost, and you meet him after 50 years, would you have the same attachment to him as if he grew up with you? Would you have the same attachment? He would be a complete stranger. What, you're my brother? Yeah, I'm your brother. Wow. You know? How do I come to terms with this? Right? Understand this. The bonds that we have with our family is not because of the fact that, you know, we are born to them or we are related by blood to them. It's because we shared our life and experiences with them. We shared our life with them. A part of our life, a portion of our life we shared with them. That's where the attachment comes from, the bond and the love. If you don't know someone, you can't love them. It's hard. Yes, you love them as Allah's creatures, and you know what, I love all Allah's creatures. That's different. But to have the way that you look at your son is different than the way that you look at your neighbor's son. Right? If your neighbor's son is up to no good in the backyard, you know, he's out there, you know, doing something wrong, you know, you look at him and maybe, you know, use some choice words on him. Right? These neighbors, dirty neighbors and all that, whatever. Right? You use it on them, right? But would you react the same way if you saw your son doing that thing in the backyard? If you saw your son doing that thing, you would see you have a different reaction. Completely different reaction. Why? Because you care. Because there's love. You know, you don't just let him get away or go bad. You feel terrible. Because of love. That's why. So my friends, love comes from ma'rifat, from knowing someone well, right? That's where love comes from. And so now when love comes from that, the other condition of love is that whoever you know must be worthy of love also. See, this is what I mentioned 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I think. I mentioned this, just why I just want to brief through this so I can reach another result that I didn't reach on that day. If that thing that you want to fall in love is worthy of love, then you'll fall in love with them. Right? Your love will increase. So for example, if I am a doctor and you know what? Urologist. Right? Now, being a urologist, even though I know about pee and poop all my life, it doesn't mean I'm going to fall in love with pee and poop. Right? It won't happen. It makes my... it gives me the bread and butter in my home, gives me a good income, but I'm not going to fall in love with it. Because it's not worthy of it. There's nothing in it to fall in love with it. You see? The closer you go, the more disgusting it is. So whenever you want to go closer to something, you go closer, your love increases, as long as that thing is deserving of it. As long as the thing is deserving of it. That's why I said, the only true place where your love is realized, the only place where your love is realized is Allah. Because the closer you get to Allah, the more you see perfection in Him. Right? That's where it's realized. But when it comes to Allah, there's a technical problem. There is a technical problem when it comes to ma'rifat of Allah. Understand this very well. Right? See, Allah is incomprehensible. His awsaf, His reality is incomprehensible. It cannot enter your mind. You cannot grasp Him. There's no way to grasp Allah. That yes, I know Allah. Of course you don't know Allah. You know of Him. You don't know Him. You can't know Him. Our minds are too limited to know someone who's unlimited. We are too imperfect to know someone who's perfect. So obviously, when it comes to ma'rifat of Allah, what ma'rifat are you going to gain of Allah? Anyone who says, I know Allah, he is lying. Yes, I have ma'rifat of Allah, he is lying. You have ma'rifat of Allah, then you don't have ma'rifat of yourself. Right? You don't even know about yourself. You think you know about Allah? You know where Allah's limits are? You know where Allah's greatness is and magnificence is? There's no way we can comprehend that. And Allah also knows it. That when we want to know about Allah, we know of Him through the signs that we see. Through the deeds that Allah has done, through those things we see Allah. So now Allah's qualities, we want to know them in order to get closer to Allah. Allah also knows that you cannot do this. That's why Allah says, listen, you cannot gain ma'rifat of me, but I will send someone to you who will manifest the magnificence of my qualities in a tangible sense. So that when you get close to them, then you will realize who the real creator is. That's why Allah says that you want to love me, then you will have to love Ahlul Bayt to know who I am. You have to know who Ahlul Bayt are. That's the tangible goal. That's why for every intangible objective, Allah gave a tangible goal in Islam. He says, وَمَنْ يُحَاجِرُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ Whoever goes towards Allah and His Messenger. Right? Whoever leaves his home, وَمَنْ يَخْرَجُ مِنْ بَيْتِهِ مُحَاجِرًا إِلَى اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ Whoever leaves his home in order to go to Allah and His Messenger. So you see, when you leave your home, what is that? Is that a physical journey or a spiritual journey? Leaving your home is physical or spiritual? Physical, right? Good. Meaning you leave your home. You strive. You leave your home, you get out of your home, you leave the place that you're staying. To go where? إِلَى اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ To Allah and His Messenger. Is Allah a physical goal or a spiritual goal? Spiritual. Understand this, my friends. The beginning of every journey, spiritual journey in Islam, is a physical motion. You go to Hajj, you go to the house of Allah. But is the house of Allah the goal or is Allah the goal? See, Allah made you go to the house of Allah in order to reach Allah as a symbol that this is the journey you make in order to reach me. The same way He made a physical, tangible goal for us, that when we reach that goal, then this love that we have in our heart, that is our heart is aching for, to love someone, that love can be realized. It is when we reach Ahlul Bayt, it's realized. The more we know them, the more we fall in love with them. The more we know them, the more we fall in love with them. This is love, my friends. Love of Ahlul Bayt is one-stop solution for many things in Islam. Many things are corrected through the love of Ahlul Bayt. Many things are corrected. It holds us back. It gives us taqwa. It gives us ma'rifat of Allah. Let me explain how it does that in a few sentences if you send aloud salawats. In the battle of Khaybar, right? You know, let's see. Just want to see the time. Make sure that I do have time. Right? Okay. In the battle of Khaybar, you see, Imam Ali did something that was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. People who saw it knew this is unbelievable. Because, you know, I mean, when the flag was given to other people to conquer the fort, the people fell short. It was given to Imam Ali. Imam Ali went there. And in one heroic movement, he went to the gate of Khaybar and he unhooked the gate, unhinged it from its hinges and threw it away. Now the people who saw this, obviously it's a gate of a fort. It's a big gate. Unlike, you know, like a door or something, you know. It's a gate. It requires many people to lift it or open it. Right? He did it alone. Everyone saw it. All the Muslims saw it. They're like looking at him. Did you see that? Did you see what he did? Did you see what he did? You know, they're amazed. And in the books, they were like looking at each other. Like, did you see what Ali did? Did you see what Ali did? In order to give you a comparison of this, right? In order to give a comparison. You know, you do something great, you know, everyone looks at you, gives you accolades, and, you know, is just amazed at you, right? Now, in that situation, how would you feel? You know, an incident I'll mention, right? Just for this. Very small, minute things. And we take full credit for them and more accolades than we deserve. We want it, right? We want attention for that. Little things that we do these things. And that's the case. Little things that we do, we want so much thing for attention. Yeah, I did this. This one guy, you know, he was from Pakistan. Right, and he was a doctor, lived in the West for a long time. He became rich and everything. But one thing he didn't get in the West is respect. You know, you're still, you know, an immigrant. You know, he couldn't go to the clubs that the people here go to, didn't do any of that. So he wanted respect. So he decided, you know what, I'll go back home now. I've earned enough money, so let me go back home. He went back home, he said, you know what, I'm going to stand up for elections in home. So his old friend from high school, you know, he was there in Pakistan. So he went back there to him and said, you know, I'm going to stand up in the election. So that's a great idea, let's do it. So the friend became the campaign manager. He said, let's go around now. So they got together to go out for campaigning. So now this doctor came out in a three-piece suit. You know, three-piece suit, and he came out to go out campaigning. The friend looked at him and said, what are you doing? He says, three-piece suit, you know, it's Armani. Said, what? Three-piece suit, Armani. Listen, you go out to the people like this, no one's going to vote for you. They'll think you're a stranger. No, you have to wear their clothes. You know, the hijama and kurta, shalwar kameez. This is a shalwar, right? Yeah, like this type of shalwar that I'm wearing. He said, but I don't have those clothes, the doctor said. I don't have those clothes. He goes, don't worry. I'll give you mine. All right? So he got his clothes from his friend and he wore it and they went on the campaign trail. They came to the first stop, the first village, right? So the idea was that the friend is going to introduce him and then he's going to come and speak. So the friend goes up to introduce his doctor friend who's standing up for the election. He says, friends, we are here to introduce a great Pakistani homeboy and he has come back to learn, and he has come back to be, and he's going to bring hospitals here and schools here, and he's going to build roads and electricity and light bulbs, and the shalwar he's wearing is mine. So the doctor comes up and everyone's looking at his shalwar instead of thinking about all the hospitals and all that. So now he goes back, the doctor goes back to him and says, listen, don't say the shalwar is yours. Alright, I won't say it. Next time they go to the other place, right? Again, he gives the same speech. My friend, he's going to make hospitals, roads and everything, and the shalwar is not mine. Like, what is this? And you know, again, the same thing, listen, neither is it yours nor mine. Don't say it. So then the next time they went, and again, the friend goes up and says, listen, all of these things he's going to make, and the shalwar, we don't know whose it is. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali. I want you to see why that this person's mind is on the shalwar. You see, in the whole campaign, this doctor is giving all the money for the campaign, and that one shalwar was contributed by this person, and it sticks to you such a way that you want everyone to notice that shalwar. It happens even in masjid. For example, I bring one, you know, for example, there's wall hanging here, right? And out of all the wall hanging, I said, so brother, did you see that one? Do you like that one? Why are you mentioning that? Because it's my contribution, right? See, little things that we want to do, little things that we do, we want attention for it. Imagine if we were in Khaybar and broke the door of Khaybar. What would we be doing? For little things we want, all these accolades. If we had broken the door of Khaybar, we'll be saying, Ana Rabbukum al-Ala. I'm the big one, right here, the big shot. No, worship me. Yeah, don't you see that? Understand this. Imam Ali, there's something that is unbelievable. People could not believe it. They saw it. They were all shocked by it. And everyone was saying, Ali is great, Ali is great, Ali is great. They could not stop talking about Ali. When Imam Ali came back and they said, how did you do it? He says, I did not do it with my strength. I did it with Allah's strength. It is Allah who made me do it. In other words, what Ali is saying, don't look at me, look at Allah who is giving me the strength to do this. My friends, giving the credit to Allah when everyone is looking at you, this is the true understanding. This is why you see that Allah gave that much to Ahlul Bayt. Because whenever he was giving more to Ahlul Bayt, they were giving to Allah. They were directing to Allah. Some little thing comes to us, that's it. We want attention ourselves. This is the difference. My friends, just here, life, when you see the life of Ahlul Bayt, life of Ahlul Bayt or the life that they taught, many of us have the wrong concept of their life. We think that their life was just hardships and nothing else, and their life is just sad, and they have, you know, depressed faces, and that's it. You know, and we don't have the right idea of their life. You know, but let me give you a proof of that. You know, the life that Ahlul Bayt led was a happy life, was a wonderful life. It was a life that is full of life. Because that's what Islam wants us to lead. Islam wants us to lead a life that is full of life. That we are full of life, we are happy, we have everything to be happy about. That when you see us, when you see a mu'min, you will be like, wow, this person is living. He's alive. This is the way to live a life. Then when you make a sacrifice, then you'll see it will be a real sacrifice. If your life is already miserable, if you don't even have a life, if you're a loser, what's the use of giving a life then? You know? I mean, look at these idiots who give their life with this suicide bombers. Who are these suicide bombers? You know, their lives are miserable. In fact, they don't have lives. So these losers are approaching and say, hey, listen, you know, you don't have a life here, so you might as well give this up and get something there. You know, they have nothing here, so they're offered these things, so they go there. So what's the use of such a sacrifice? You're not sacrificing anything. You don't even have a life to sacrifice. You know, sacrifice would be when you actually have a life. When your life is full of life, full of happiness. This is the reason why when Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in Ziyarat-e-Arba'in, which is by Imam Sadiq, when he spoke of Imam Hussain, what does he say? He said, I testify what? Ishta Sa'ida wa Madaita Hamida. I testify, Hussain, that you led a wonderful life. You had a happy life that you led. You're happy, your life was full of life. Sa'ida means that happy, you were happy in your life. And you died an honorable death. Friends, when your life is good, then sacrifice means something. Then you're sacrificing something. That's why Allah wants us to lead a life that is so full of joy and happiness that when it comes time to give,
they had a life. They had a great life. That when they're giving it for Allah's sake, then you say that, wow, such lives are lost. Such lives are lost. This is where the value of sacrifice came in, my friend. You know, when the caravan of Imam Hussain after Ashura was taken in the court of Ibn Ziyad in Kufa, and the woman whose covers were removed from them, the outer garments were removed from them, taken away, snatched away from them, and they're brought, and they're trying to cover themselves up with their hands from the people. The only person that was there was Imam Sajjad. And when they were brought inside the court, they huddled together in one corner of the court. Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad looked at them. He said, who are they? And even asked for Zainab. Where is the sister of Hussain? I heard about. He asked for her. And when he saw them, then he saw Imam Sajjad a little bit away from them. He wasn't close to them. You know why Imam Sajjad was standing away from them? The reason Imam Sajjad was standing away from them is because he did not want the attention of the people to go to the ladies. So he stood away from them so they would look at him instead of the ladies in order to protect their honor. Imam Sajjad was standing away. He looked at Imam Sajjad. He said, who is he? And they said, this is Ali ibn Hussain. And he said, I thought that he was killed in Karbala. He's talking about Ali Akbar, who was killed. He thought that this is Ali Akbar. He said, no, this is the son of Hussain, Ali ibn Hussain. Ibn Ziyad said, why is he alive? Why is he alive? Kill him. Right now, kill him. And they went there to kill him. When Zainab heard that they are going to kill Imam Sajjad, she jumped in front of him. She just lunged herself in front of him and said, you will have to kill me before you kill him. You know, you'll have to kill me before you kill him. You know, when Ubaidullah saw the sacrifice of Zainab, this urgency of sacrifice of Zainab, you know what Ubaidullah said? He says, look at the life of these people. What a life do they have? He's amazed at what a life do they have that they're ready to sacrifice for each other. He says, we don't have such relationships that they do. We don't have so much love as they do. Look at them, how much love they have between themselves. This is sacrifice. That when you want to sacrifice, then you have a life, then you sacrifice. Then you give it for Allah. And this is where you understand the meaning and the value of the sacrifice of Khadija, the wife of the Prophet. Tonight, when we see that she is passing away, it was a time where the Prophet, his heart was full of gloom and unhappiness. When Khadija, you know, the love that she had for the Prophet, just let me tell you some history about Khadija. You know, the Prophet used to work for her. He was the manager of her trade caravan. And one day, after a trip, when the caravan was coming back, you have to understand, who is this lady Khadija? Khadija was one of the richest women in Arabia. And that was a lot. She was the richest woman in Arabia, one of the top rich people in all of Hijaz, the top businessmen. She was the pride of her tribe. She was someone that everyone looked up to. She cared for her whole tribe. She used to give. They were dependent on her. Her behavior was like a queen, like a princess. She would not run or do exciting things. No, she would behave in a way that everyone saw elegance in her. She was such an elegant woman. And when this caravan was on its way back, and Rasulullah was in charge of this caravan, so Rasulullah had camped outside of Medina, away from Makkah, and he sent the manager to go and inform the lady that we are back and these are the reports from the trip. So when she was at home on the terrace with some of her friends. She was with some of her friends there. And you know what? When this person came, the manager came to tell her about the reports, she was just looking behind him. You know, she stood up, she was looking behind to see where the Prophet is. Where is the Prophet? She says, where is Muhammad? He says, he isn't here, he will be here tomorrow. But he sent me to give you this report. And her face turned sad because the Prophet was not there. This is before he's a prophet. For anything. You know? And you know what? Her friends, when the Prophet came, she was again with her friends, and when she heard the knock on the door, like a little girl, she ran to the door to open it. Her friends were shocked that he's just an ordinary worker, and why are you acting like this in front of him? We've never seen you like this. This is the amount of love that she had for the Prophet. Just imagine this. And then, you know, when she proposed to get married to the Prophet, she asked the Prophet that, what is it that you're looking for in a wife? You know what the Prophet said? He said, I'm looking for someone who's equal to me in status, or someone who is beneath me in status in regards to money, in regards to wealth. And right away she knew that she's richer. She's from the rich class. He's just a normal person in terms of finances. This is what the Prophet said. I'm looking for someone who's equal to me in status, or someone who's beneath me. I want to make her my wife. And you know what? When she heard this reply of the Prophet, she said that, I want to do something for you. I want to do something right now. So what is it? He says, I want to give over all of my wealth to you. All my wealth I want to give to you. Everything that I have, I want to give to you. Here, it's yours now. It's yours. I am also yours. Now, can I become your wife? My friends, this is Khadija. This is Khadija who loved the Prophet, who loved him for his cause, who loved him because she knew that he's going to be the messenger of Allah. And the sacrifices he gave. Now, if you look at that time, and I don't have time to enumerate the wealth that she had. If you look at that time, now when it came to her death, at the time she died, she did not have enough money to buy a kafan, a shroud for herself. They could not muster up enough money to buy a shroud for her. So Rasulullah put his abba on her in order to bury her. This is what she left with. Now understand that when someone has made a sacrifice like that, when someone has given everything that they have for the Prophet of Allah, then you understand why Rasulullah, when he gave the abba to her, there Rasulullah is now inside the grave of Khadija, and now he's saying to Khadija that, Khadija, you're leaving me, has taken the help of Allah away from me. You are the one that Allah had sent to give me the help. This is the aun from Allah, the help from Allah that Allah had sent Khadija. Now that today Khadija is going, now Rasulullah has given abha to Khadija. Now it is because of Khadija, her sacrifices, that she has children like Fatima, that she has grandchildren like Zainab and Umm Kulsoom. If that is Khadija's death, now imagine when Fatima was dying, you know, Fatima remembered her mother that she was alone. And when Fatima was dying and when she was giving her life, then Imam Ali came to Fatima and he saw her. And then he met Fatima and Fatima spoke to Ali. You know what Fatima said to Ali? She said, Ali, tell me, have I been a good wife to you? Have I been a good wife to you? Have I done anything wrong to you? Ali said, no, by far, you have been good. I should be asking you, have I been a good husband to you? Now that Fatima died, Imam Ali went inside to give ghusl to Fatima. When he went inside to give ghusl to Fatima, he told everyone, do not make any noise, because we don't want people to know Fatima's wasiyat. Fatima had said, do not let any one of these people know that I've died. And when he was giving ghusl to her, Ali let out a loud scream. And when he let the scream out, Hassan and Hussein came to him and said, Father, you said do not make noise. Why are you making noise? He said, because when I was giving ghusl to Fatima, I saw an injury on Fatima, that her ribs were broken, and I have never seen this. Fatima was hiding this from me.
سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب منقلبون ونحن بحق محمد يا على بحق نبي فاطر السماوات والارض يا محسن بحق يا سن يا قديم الاحسان بحق حسين الله give us the tawfiq to be on the right paths, give us the wisdom to understand your guidance, hasten the reappearance of my mom, make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين يا حسين
يا حسين Y'all say.